Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking with Martin Lenz Fitzgerald. Martin is a tireless advocate for voice, a voice consultant. He runs a voice-based newsletter, he's a book author, and he's an all-around thought leader around voice. I could keep on talking about Martin, but I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Hi, Roger. Good to be here. Good to be on your show. Bummer we can't meet in real life because I remember meeting you in real life. That was very good. So, yeah, who am I? What do I do? Yeah, I call myself a voice evangelist. And because that is my function, I evangelize the word of voice, if you can say that, I guess. And I've been doing that for several years now. And it's something I have to do. It's not something I can't help myself. Let me put it that way. I've always have worked with emerging new media. It started out with the web in the early 90s. And in 94, I created the first website for Shell Research here in Holland. I did email marketing when it was the first time that you can switch different types of content based on profiles, database marketing now, and CRM, it's all standard now. I did mobile, I did augmented reality, all new media that I embraced and brought to companies, to the people. And now this is voice. And I manifest this through several activities. First off, by just giving keynotes and talking, sharing the narrative and helping people understand what is this new opportunity, what is this new platform, this what can you do with it? What is it really if I talk voice? Because it's not that program where you can sing on stage, which is also something voice on TV. In Holland, it's called The Voice of Holland. So that's very confusing here. And by the way, I'm Dutch, and I work mostly in Amsterdam where I live. But I, as you can hear, I am international. I talk very well English. And I work with a lot of clients all over the place. But I do a lot of keynotes. I have two organizations I run and I founded. One is Project Zilver. We'll be talking about that. Voice for Older Adults, as well as the Dutch Voice Coalition, which is open and sovereign voice technology for Dutch, for the Dutch language. And next to that, I'm a consultant. So I do various projects where I help create voice applications in one way or the other. Like you said, I'm a book author. I wrote an introduction to voice for people that want to know about it. Marketing managers, innovation managers, anybody within an organization who sees it as a new channel and wants to know more about it. Yeah, I make a lot of media. I'm actually currently also in a production run of several podcast series here in Holland. And yeah, and that's how I make my time as a voice evangelist, or fill my time as a voice evangelist. And one thing I forget to mention, where we have been seeing each other a lot, or virtually at least, and that is the Open Voice Network, which is the standards organization for voice, which I find very important. And overall, my work motto is I instigate changes to create movements. So I really am interested in what can we do to create a movement that is of importance and that is important for us as people, not just to make money, but to do good, to do well, and not to be proprietary or things like that, because it's about something for everybody in any which way. So on a very high level, I'm just a change maker.
Great. Oh, I love that. So an instigator of change for movements for good, I guess I'd say. And I think that, my job title is evangelist too, which sometimes confuses people. When I told it to my father-in-law, he's like, are you in the church now? And I'm like, no.
No tense.
But it's a great description, actually. It is a good description of what you do. And that is go out and talk to people about this amazing new technology that we're all involved in and what it can and can't do and what all the opportunities are. And that truly is, in the meaning of the word evangelizing, is doing that, right? Is going and talking to people about something.
And what I love, it doesn't matter if you have to wake me up at 3 a.m, once you ask me a question, I get going on it. You know, and it's so primeval or primordial or whatever the word is. It's my fate to do this. And every 10 years, I kind of switch new medium and there's something new emerges. And then I find myself doing events, doing newsletters, starting companies and other initiatives within that new field and sharing the word and helping people discover it.
And that's awesome. Yeah. I was going to ask you, you said you'd done some web and then mobile and then AR and now voice. So yeah, certainly you've stayed with those emerging technologies. Tell me about what was your first experience with voice, and maybe expand a little bit on it. Is what made you say, you know what, this is going to be an amazing thing and I'm going to dedicate my career moving forward to?
Well, I think voice had two moments for me. First was when I was still running my company Layer, which was in the global augmented reality network or platform that we had 12 years ago. And of course, I was wearing Google Glass, and Google Glass was mostly voice driven. So that's when I had my first experience with voice interfaces. And I used to talk to my Android, which in the beginning worked better actually than Siri, I guess. Yeah, Siri already then. But then I started talking to my glasses, and that was amazing because here in Holland, for instance, because I lived in New York mostly then, but I remember in Holland sitting on the bike, my wife was pregnant with the twins, and I was too late because, you know, running home, and I had to do stuff because she couldn't do anything. So I would say, hey, Google, send a message to Lori. I'm on my way home with my hands on the handlebar. And I just had to tap once. I didn't have to tap because that was part of it. So that was my first experience. But that was not a smart speaker yet. I can't send messages yet. Oh, and now she goes off again. Let me unplug her.
The perils of talking about voice. You got to turn off all your devices. Yeah. I run around before I talk to anyone and turn off the 12 things on my desk or whatever. Anyway, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. So that was my first experience. And then I saw Alexa being announced. I was part of the first beta group, and my mother-in-law was got the package because it had to be done with an American credit card, which I arranged through her. And she happened to be, I think it came out like just before or after the New Year's that I got it here in Holland. And I already had Hue lights, the Philips Hue lights, which was really annoying with the app. And then from that day onwards, daily, I use the light function of voice, of Alexa. And I liked it. Didn't really do too much with it. I just used it like I'd use anything, new technology, which I like. I remember doing Amazon Music because it didn't do with Spotify yet. Later, it changed. And then I still had another company back then in another field. And then after a while, I'm like, I'm ready to do something new. And I literally looked over. I'm like, hey, wait a minute, nobody in Holland is doing anything with that. Nobody actually does anything with that. With Layer, with the AR company, we literally built our own ecosystem. So I have an idea of what I could see what they were trying to do with the developers. I have an opinion about that or experience. So I'm like, yeah, oh, and they're doing it that way. That's not that smart, but I understand what. And, you know, okay. And so right away, that whole story unfolded from then on. And that's also when I'm like, okay, but what am I going to do? I have no clue yet. Only thing I can do is just jump in, call myself an evangelist, because that's my core role always. That's my function, if you will, and start all these things. So I found my buddy Sam. He was interested in starting. I did stuff before during the mobile time with him. And so with him, I started a newsletter, podcast, and an event series. I started talking, and slowly the business built. And yeah. Here we are now.
Well, I think so many of us jumped into voice not knowing quite what we're doing. I'd argue maybe we haven't fully figured that out. And part of the reason that industry is so interesting to me is there's so much to be discovered.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? So much of what and why and how consumers want to interact with voice and what to do. That's a great story. So you were an early, so I had Google Glass too, and I thought it was really cool tech. There's a lot of social pushback about wearing it around here in the Bay Area when it came out. Do you, just quick
friend, yeah.
Yeah, quick prediction. Do you think that's going to come back? You know, AR and glasses is going to be something that's going to come back?
I know they're all working on it. I know a lot of people in the field. I see it's so much more advanced. I think, but just like voice, it's going to arrive, but not in the way that we think it is. I mean, look at Niantic and how they're emerging and how well they're emerging. On the other hand, look at the hard push that Zuckerberg is doing. And I think, yes, we will have something, but how exactly, I don't know. I stop predicting because we really don't know. And it's all these, I think one of the best podcasts on that was 5 years ago from Andreessen Horowitz. I think it was Ben Horowitz who did it, or somebody else. No, Andrew Chin. Anyway, And he, like, because that's what VCs do. They pick apart all the technology, state where it is, and then state where the business is. And he'd say, like, yeah, and therefore it's not going to come for another 10 years. And I'm like, yeah, that's true, actually. But that's just one vision. And that's what I find so interesting. I mean, when I was doing AR, I had such a clear vision. I thought I knew it, you know, being relatively young. And now I totally let that go, as you hear, the prediction part. But you can't make things happen. That's one of my biggest takeaways. And so that's also what I, just jumping in, like, you don't know. And if you, with a big smile, can say, I don't know, but I'm open. I'm smart. I can do short-term things, so I can make an app, or I can do this, or I can do that. Then I can make something really worthwhile and work well in the short term, and maybe get a good idea on a real long view that lasts maybe a couple of years even. Yeah, well, like Adam with Bixby. And you can only do that if you're swimming in the river. You can't do it from the side. So if I look back on AR, that's where I learned that. I mean, before that, I did Mobile Monday. I had that company, Mobile, did a lot of mobile. And so I was dabbling and doing all kinds of stuff, talking to all kinds of people, knew the industry of mobile. That's where AR back then was rolling out on top of. So that's why I was able to create that vision for Layer. If I now, and so literally that was my strategy for voice. Just jump in, do lots of stuff, get to know people, start playing around, doing projects, get your hands dirty. And slowly something will emerge that is tangible. And that is maybe even something that will take you forward. And to me, I visualize that as a planet or a moon solidifying around the planet. All these pieces together slowly become the moon. Well, you can also have it like that, but and to me, it's a matter of surfing that wave of change in the smart way. And it's like a surfer. You have to see it, but you have to be there every day.
Oh, I love the surfing analogy. And I was thinking as you're talking, it's we see this technology and we go, wow, that technology has promise. And usually, as technologists go out and get it wrong, what the promise was the first few times. But eventually, the technology does have something promise and does work. But you're absolutely right. It's not the way what people expected when it first came out. The hype was here and the reality was here. And yeah. The hype was justified because there was something meaty there, but what you thought it was about wasn't true. It was over here, something different. So that's a great way to think of it, because I think people get really tied down to tunnel vision around that. And it's, you know what? Keep your eyes and ears open.
Yeah. And be like water. Just move around with it. Follow your heart, follow your belly, follow your wallet if need be. But yeah, don't be too hard on that direction.
Hey, Martin, tell me more about, so you mentioned the Dutch Voice Coalition. Tell me more about what the Dutch Voice Coalition is.
Yeah, the Nederlandstalige Spraakcoalitie, if you want to say it in Dutch, the Dutch Language Voice Coalition, and there would be better translation, but it's forming, so it's not born yet. And so last year, the Dutch PBS, they're kind of more the BBC, like it's a big organization here, they did 10 voice projects, from apps on Google to ASR on TV programs for subtitles and all kinds of other stuff. And they found that the Dutch voice technology was not really up to par and was not really transparent, also, like who does what and how. And so on one hand, everybody's talking voice, but it wasn't really ready or something. There was something missing. And so we started talking, me and that organization. And we're like, let's see if other people have this as well, or other user organizations. But also, let's just get to know the whole field here in Holland, because maybe there's something going on. And fueled also by the fact that Google does not really have technology people working on the Google Assistant. I mean, has some people part-time occasionally doing something, but they're like, the luxury you have in the US is you have teams working on functionality. And of course, you have Bixby as well. You have Amazon, of course, with 10,000 people or whatever. There's dedicated resources on the new channel. Here in Holland, there's not. There's only some marketing. And so there's an underserved situation, but that was a feeling. And so what we did is I set up a discovery process, get to know everybody, do calls, and see what they found. So you companies that use it, for instance, insurers who use the technology, call centers, other media companies, international, also in Belgium, because there's some Dutch there as well, or half of it, half of Belgium speaks Dutch or a version of Dutch, Flemish, and also totally underserved. They actually use Google Assistant on the radio to make fun of it because it's so bad. And so we found that there's lots of other organizations that have issues with it. Also, there's lots of potential within the universities. There's lots of people studying it, working on it, creating code, but very disjointed. And there was the government who have no idea about just the idea of voice technology. And the fact that maybe if we don't do this right, do something ourselves, we'll have to talk Google Dutch to our systems in 5 years. And I use that kind of like a dark mirror or black mirror scenario. So that was the turnaround. What should we do? What could we do? What if we can actually take the reins ourselves together and create something ourselves? And that's what we're slowly moving towards. And so we solved three problems. So the lack of local models, that's what it came down to. So not only is the Dutch itself is not perfect, not a lot of resources on there, but also the dialect. So there's lots of variants. Amazing, have a Boston Englishman, stuff like that. I don't know if that's the same, or Texan. That the Dutch version of that wasn't really working. Also, there is, of course, different user groups, older adults, of course, children, also not really understood. So we need better models so it works better. And instead of waiting for an Amazon to enter the market, a Bixby to enter the market, or Samsung or Google to work on it, let's not just organize it ourselves. And then if we do it ourselves, let it be open, let it be done smartly, user-driven, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one problem. The other one, platform dominance. So the fact that we are totally, as Dutch people, submitted to either the Google shareholder, Mr. Bezos, no, he doesn't really run it anymore. But anyway, to this Rocket guy, or some Chinese people, because they also with Skytech or Flytech and others do it. So is that the smart way to run your cultural heritage? Because language is culture. And those are the questions that we had. So what do we do with that? And thirdly, the knowledge gap, just nobody knows about it. Well, you and I as evangelists know about this. And so maybe we can bring the people together so that the universities, the government, just make them aware first. Because one thing I think, I don't know if you have that in the US, in France, I know for sure you have it. In Holland, there is something called the Green Book, and that is where you see correct Dutch. So how do you spell a word? What are the rules? And my wording for it was like, shouldn't we own and control and manage the digital green book? So the ultimate model for Dutch. That was the vision. And so we created the mission for ourselves to develop speech technology for the Dutch language area as a healthy public-private collaboration, open, trusted, inclusive, and sovereign. So open, anybody can be part of it. Trusted, you know where the data goes once you use the stuff. Inclusive, it works for everybody. And sovereign, it's controlled by people locally. And that's clear who does that. And that is mostly the idea also of how the internet, for instance, was developed. So this is a clear, to me, I designed this literally as a movement. It's the largest movement I've been working on. Over 20 organizations of variety, so rich, very rich variety. And slowly we're now shaping that. And I got the first financial commitments. I need to solidify that. So we're really, so my plan is for in the next half year with the money to start really defining projects and creating models mostly, but also creating a process. How do you do a model well? You have, for instance, the Open Voice or the Mozilla Voice Project. And lots to learn there. Is that good enough for us or do we want to do it different? And set a standard, locally at least, on how to do that. And hopefully. And I think, first of all, this is something for every country, or this is relevant for every country that doesn't want to commit and be dependent on commercial organizations to run its richest or most important cultural channel, speech, voice, language in the digital domain. And not that this is the answer, because but I want to get the right holistic group together So slowly we can answer the questions that will come up. I mean, so say the metaverse comes. How will we do that? It's the same kind of group almost that will manage that. And every country in France, Germany, is relevant for every country. So also I want to document the process that we're going through. I mean, because we're the Dutch BBC or that's backing this now, it's public domain. And already there's lots of interest from the European Broadcasting Union and all the countries that are part of it, because they see that this is, yeah, it is important. Especially the media companies feel the pain because they don't want to broadcast on a Google channel specifically. They have to, but they don't want to maybe. And so maybe we can develop our own even. So very interesting, very large process.
So voice for the Dutch people is what I think you're talking about. And it struck me, that's pretty powerful to think. You used the term Google Dutch. And I think we've seen that many places. Obviously, you have lots of different dialects of Dutch, right? And very different ones. So my friends in Bruges, right? Speaking Flemish, so that's quite different. But I've seen the videos on YouTube, particularly in the UK, which has got a rich variant of, and they have to speak the Queen's English or High English and do that. And so there's a homogenization of culture that goes on there. If you say you must speak to this device in this particular dialect and do that, and it's all ha-ha, fun and games, a little bit annoying, but there's something bigger that's a little bit more insidious there that I think you're spot on. We need to, language is rich, language is culture, and the variations in language reflect the culture. And if our devices only understand one variation, that's a challenge to be addressed.
And what, as an evangelist, a responsible evangelist, maybe it's even that, I think it's my responsibility to help everybody see that let's not be too late on this. And have the infrastructure ready, like maybe we should do it ourselves, some things, or be aware of it, because there's a big chance that in 5 years, everything will have an Android system and a Google Assistant in there. And not that specifically bad, but we need to be aware, and the power of these platforms. I think that's we live in such a unique time with these companies being so impactful. We've never dealt with it. And on one hand, it's great because look at all the devices that we have. On the other hand, we need to be aware, like, how to deal with it and be smart about it, because they are more powerful than Belgium. That's not, yeah. Right. And that's, yeah. And personally, I think, but that goes a little bit further even, that there might even be room for an independent assistant platform that is not commercially driven. And I'm very keen on, and this is just one of the bricks that I see might help for that or building that. Because if you look at what is needed for something like that, lots of data, lots of personal data. It needs to know you, like your neighbor knows you, or maybe even your partner, for an assistant needs to know you on that level. And do you really want to give that to a company that either is good in groceries or good at marketing ads and doing some search work, and which is driven by stock markets and other eco-driven stuff? Or should it be something like the water company? At least here in Holland, it's communal driven. And I've been doing some research in that, and we all know the meme of the tragedy of the commons. I don't know if you're familiar with that. So we all think that we cannot manage our resources together. Well, this is totally proven wrong. This is a hardcore meme. And there is actually, that is possible. And lots of good examples. It's been scientifically proven, Nobel Prize awarded, people have proven that, no, we can manage stuff together without somebody being in total control and owning everything. And this is very long term, a very high level, I guess, or very meta. And specifically something really weird for the US market, which is so dominant in general. But I think voice, but more specifically assistance, digital assistance, there is maybe another path to be discovered. And that's kind of like a third storyline I always add in there.
I'm going to go back to your early analogy about surfing. I'd say we just caught the wave. We have no idea what's coming, right? And
exactly.
Some new waves coming and something's going to happen there. And I think you're spot on that there's a lot ahead. Obviously, I work for one of the big voice companies, but I will tell you that I'm a big fan of independent voice assistants and this arising, because I think we're so early and nobody's quite figured it out. And I love what happened to the web. being an open standard based thing. And I will say that I'm a big advocate for voice going in that direction more than the proprietary direction that it currently has. And I hope that happens. And part of that could happen if there's pressure and it says, you know what, there's all these open platforms that frankly are working better. The Dutch open platform is working better than big platform X. I'll tell you what, that's going to force big platform X to flex and support that. And that's a good thing. Yin and yang kind of push and pull there. That, that's a positive. So
you need stories to change. And
good on you. So for
thank you.
The pressure on. Hey, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk up to you about something that really intrigues me, Project Zilver and bringing voice to older adults, which I think is super fascinating. But tell me more about Project Zilver.
Yeah. So actually, it's one of the first meetings I had locally here with Google and with the person who rolled out the Google Assistant or launched it here in Holland as one of his 20% projects, because that's the room he got. And I was responsible for the marketing for the whole Nordics. And by chance, that first meeting where we got to know each other, I'm like, yeah, I'm starting evangelism. And he knew Layer and the other company I had. And we started talking about older people and older adults, how little we knew, how hard they had, time they had with the Google products in his case, but just in general with apps and stuff, and how voice could actually be a technology or democratizes technology because it's so easy. And we had that vision right away. I think Thursday, Monday, I sent him a pitch deck like Project Zilver and blah, 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 and not money driven. We just need to, you know, save one life per year and everything we spend on it is good. And let's get those speakers out there and blah, blah, blah. And of course, that didn't happen yet. And that wasn't something that they could right away do. But slowly, I with him also, we like discovered that subject more. And so we started talking to the Dutch government bank that pays out your child support, but more importantly, your pension. There's a government pension that everybody gets. Not a lot, but it's something. And so they deal a lot with older adults. And they right away already were working on voice and they saw the relevance of older adults of voice. So he said, hey, and that's how this happens. Like, I got a workspace. Let's do the workshop there. I'm like, yeah, let's do the workshop there. And so I invited I contacted local AARP, some insurance people. So I thought I need to get the whole, kind of an ecosystem there. From day one, it was obvious that there was something there. We initiated not a project because I wanted to build stuff right away. I thought like I was still out of my previous building career and like I wanted to make something. No, let's do research. So by chance, we did the first large research on voice in older adults, 3,500 people. And in short, basically, they all wanted it. One in five already did it. This is 5-6 years ago. And we did qualitative research. We had 20 devices or so that we, for 2 weeks, gave to them. They had to write up. We did qualitative interviews. They told Google stuff that they didn't even know themselves. Well, you can actually can call, but you just have to create a British account and stuff, you know, they could hack their way into the weird rules they had here locally. And so we learned so much. And basically, we found out that there's magic in older adults and voice, and we proved it. And so we formed this consortium. We did various projects. One of the most impactful ones was with the beginning of COVID, where we managed to give away 10,000 speakers, smart speakers here in Holland within 1 day or 1.5, because we proved that people feel better when they have a smart speaker just to talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. And we thought, and we did it smartly. Actually, the local ARP, the Umbo, came up with a tactic where we would find the local Rogers and Martins who already had one but weren't over 65 and made us give it to our neighbor or our parents. And so it was our responsibility to install it. So in just that 2 hours of installation would already be quality time that we enabled. So that was already a good deal. And so with the research, with projects like the giveaway, we have a development guide. So how do you develop? We have a content guide. So what can you do for older adults? Just today, I was exploring an audiobook project. So older adults can easily become member of the general library and get audiobook through their smart speaker. And so now we're running all these projects or instigating these projects to do good through voice for the older advocate group. And I think one of the most important takeaways for me personally was I had no clue about this group of people. I had all these thoughts that were so wrong. And as you hear, I don't call them elderly anymore, because there is everybody has so many. Yeah, it's you talk about millennials. You can't talk about millennials because it's such a diverse group. And millennials, I mean, it's kind of funny, or maybe even boomers. Sorry about that, anybody. But you can't take a group and put it in such words. And specifically older adults, such negative connotations. How do you say, just negative attitude that you can't do anything when you're old and it's all over, you're going to die soon. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I had that myself. And so one of the key roles that we have is to turn that around. So for instance, right now with Google here in the Netherlands, we were a part of their design of a large campaign for older adults. And we basically helped Google Holland understand who these people were and how diverse they are and how to approach them. And in a way, it's just user-driven design in the end. You just have to be open and get to know them. But all these premonitions, the assumptions that people have, get that out of the way. Yeah, but also don't make big sites with lots of flash stuff, because that doesn't work with these people. There's some other ways to do things. And so in a way, we are more responsible. And that's what I really like, to help people understand the richness of the older adult group. And a friend of mine recommended a book about the future of aging. It's called The Future is Aging. And my first takeaway was the fact that if you think that you know who older adults are, then you're wrong. Then you're on the wrong path. If you don't know who this group is, that's where you need to be, because they're so rich. There's so much richness in that group of people and variety and where they are in their lives and what their needs are, and definitely not just health. And also with Project Silver, it's literally in our mission that we don't want to use a stigmatization, so non-stigmatizing. And we focus on life, not on care and things like that. Like, how can you live better and live more? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's how we shape it. And we just formed a legal organization this year. And slowly we're building out the work and doing more projects. And hopefully, I'm kind of started in Denmark and hopefully some more countries as soon as we are ready here locally as well.
Wow, I love that. You gave away, 10,000 speakers to older adults? That's fabulous. Because you're absolutely right. And I don't think, one of the biggest problems, I think, is we have a bunch of tech industry building tech products. And what's the demographic they probably least understand or least know is older adults. And so there aren't older adults generally working in that industry, nor is there people understand it. And so I think they ignore it. But it's amazing what you see, and people do that. I've said it before. It's funny, when I gave my in-laws, my wife's parents, my father-in-law, my mother, I bought him a little Alexa, a little Dot. My father loved it immediately, because you know what? It did the sports scores. And I'm like, great. Yeah, and now I knew it really struck when it wasn't working, and immediately, so I'm the tech support for my family.
Yeah,
immediately, my mother-in-law called me. She's like, Alexa's not working. I'm like, okay, now you really use that. That's really important to you.
You can't be without it.
You just get news and do things. They haven't even done any home automation. They like it because it's quick and easy. And they didn't grow up with tech. And so it's a heck of a lot easier than figuring out new app number X on your phone. It's just you talk to it.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I didn't even go into the detail. But that's what we found. It's like, for the first time, they're back on par.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, and they're back, everybody's doing something. Well, I got this. You know, what do you have? Like with the kids. And they can use everything. And for companies too, if they make it for voice or for older adults, everybody can use it. So also on a commercial sense, it gets back to everybody.
I was going to say they're one of the best demographics. I always say it's like the barbells at the end. It's like the older adults who didn't grow up, they didn't grow up with tech. So they're kind of open to new and different ways of doing things. And voice is the most natural way to interact with technology that we know of. And then what has been called the V generation, right? The really young kids who they want to be able to talk to everything. My kids are teenagers. They're the touch generation. They expect everything to be able to swipe. But, there's a whole generation. I'm super bullish on that. And that is great you're doing that, because I think that the industry, the technology industry, what tech has ever come where in the past, where one of the most exciting demographics to use that tech is older adults? I don't think it's ever happened before. I could be wrong and things like that. And I may be discounting some things, but boy, voice really, really resonates.
It's voice is the only new medium with an inclusion function. It includes instead of excludes. And again, yeah, it's a bit rough statement. If there's probably some holes to be stuck in, but in general, everybody can talk, or almost everybody. And just on a side note, I'm working out with a startup who works on whispering, because if you stutter or if you have issues with your box, everybody can whisper. So he's working on algorithms that understand whispering. And if you whisper, it will do your voice. It's awesome. So anyway, that's a little bit detailed. There's so much, that voice can do for people. And I think older adults are a great way. But I love the fact that, because I call it, there's a pull factor in voice in older adults. And I have not really come up with the right words yet. Apart from, look at your enthusiasm right now. And because that's all I'm using to create that movement. There's something there, but I have not. And I find that so interesting. And what is that? I think that's just a fun hobby on the side. It's, what is it now that really makes this happen? Because yes, they feel better. Yes, they feel on par, or the older adults that use it. But what is it? Why is everybody so interested in it? And of course, how can we enlarge it? Because it's so important. I mean, I'm really happy that, for instance, with Amazon, Heidi Culbertson is working there now to focus on this. And it is very important. Yeah.
Bright, bright future there. So, Martin, not only are you doing everything we talked about in voice, but a few more things. You wrote a book. You have a newsletter that comes out. You have a podcast. I guess let's start with a book. Tell me what your book was about.
Yeah, so I published it. It came out the week before Christmas here in Holland. It's in Dutch. Somebody helped me already with an English version, but I so wasn't ready for it. Might look into that. So, but in short, the book is an introduction to the channel of voice, the concept of voice for people that will probably deal with it the coming 5 years. So any type of manager in a company will want to know more about it, product, marketing, the CEO even. So what I do is, in a personal way, I explain what it is, the history, the technology, how it works on a high level so you can understand and repeat it, how you create services on it, that you have platforms, that you have conversation design. Specialists like Ben Sauer wrote a piece, and it's very specialist. Voice branding comes, of course, is in it. There's an overview of the platforms. Bixby is in it, and Samsung, of course. I even added all the good stories that we all know. And then the promise of an Adam was still there. Very interesting. And also, there's a part on privacy, how to deal with it, and which is very interesting to write. That might be interesting, because a lot of people, especially in Europe, are like, oh, but voice and privacy. And I describe it for the reader as a landscape to deal with. So say you're the product manager, you have to create something voice. And you need to, of course, get legal part of your process right away. Don't do it halfway or too late. And apart from that, you need to find your own way as a company. What is your own privacy way of working, or way of working with the concept of privacy? And then find your way within voice. And there's lots of small things, but you have to find your own way. And I describe that well in there. And there's several models in there. For instance, what I call it in Dutch is the driesprong. Or the viersprong, you know, the sign where you have the crossroads, but then you have a sign to go that way. Mm-hmm. The Paris is that. Anyway, you can choose which way. And for instance, you go for create a service for customer service. You create a service for, because you researched it and you asked your user what they wanted. You think you know yourself what you should build. And yeah, have a way to choose your first voice service. It's a nice model and method. I have a maturity model in there. You can see what will come next once you start and how you will go about it based on actual cases. There's several cases also in there. And lastly, that was my favorite one, the Black Mirror scenarios, where I went crazy and described how it can go wrong, and also offer the solution, because I can't help myself as an optimist, which is standardization and what we're working on with the OVN. They're kind of, and I don't know if you know this, because I did a talk a year before John Stein started the OVN. It was at the Danish Digital Week. And I researched that really thoroughly. Basically, I said, voice is awesome, like we all do, but there's something lacking because it's the reddest ocean ever because the big players are making it. It's not emerging from the bottom like the internet did and common resource, universities and things like that. So what is needed and what we need to work on is standards. Otherwise, it's going to go wrong. It's going to be commercial, just like mobile phones. It's fun, but you get it spammed a lot. And it's a information or an attention sucking device instead of something that makes you really better. So if we want that, we need to do something. And standards is the way. And which is fun because I had fun researching that because one of my friends, by chance, I knew he worked with the internet standards. He was actually, he introduced me to Mark Andreessen a long time ago from one of my startups. But he's actually the guy who created the MIME standard. And so he knew a lot about standard development and he worked, he was at the core. So he explained to me like how it should work. So based on that, I created the whole vision how it could work, but I knew I was not the person to organize it. So I was really happy when OVN started with Jan. I'm like, yes, you're doing it. I called it.
Ah. Maybe that's a follow-up question then is OVN or OVON, I guess is our new...
OVON,
new,
yes, sorry.
Yes, yes. I call it OVN too and I need to correct my... Yeah. But Open Voice Network and I've known John for like 15 years back those commerce days. But yeah, so we're both involved in it. Tell me about your involvement, what you're doing with OVN.
As a fan and as an evangelist of the channel, of the medium, I find it's... of utmost importance to develop standards and get everybody at the table to talk about it and to together determine the subjects to work on and to do that in the right way. Right way being open, being trusted, kind of like the values I mentioned earlier. And so when I heard about it, I was so happy. And so I jumped in. And my ideal moment in any project is the first month, weeks, year of something. And then you saw me in the beginning. I was everywhere. I spent way too much time making sure that to get to know everybody, but also to help shape the right base mix of the cocktail, if you will, because I'm not really a maker. And so my involvement is really to give John asked and unasked feedback. Like maybe you should do it a little bit this way, or in the work groups that were emerging. Like maybe we should do it this way. I miss the European voice, and how is this working in China? Of course, we had somebody for that, and really to make sure that we were working towards standards that we all could use, and not from a singular point of view. And I already did a lot of thinking about it, so I had a lot of content to add. And so the last year, I was really active basically in all work groups in the beginning. And I took over for a while in the privacy security work group, where I also did some first documents, the first primer, I would call it, which is really fun to write because normally I don't, I have other people doing the specific work. I'm more of the instigator, not the maker. So that was really a good challenge for me, which I like. And I'm actually looking, and I did a lot of work in the architecture group, which I really liked. The interoperability was the main subject there. But the last months, I was too busy to really add something. And now I'm looking, I haven't done anything yet for real. What is my next step with the OVON? And where am I going to put my feet in and get busy? Because there's a lot of good opportunity. Oh, and one of the things I did with the first event, I did the interoperability manifesto. That was fun to create. But most important there is to spread the word that interoperability is important and that we can create standards to work towards that.
I think you and I could jump up and down and evangelize about all the amazing things that are happening in OVON and things. And I guess I'll say to listeners, go to openvoicenetwork.org, right? I'll put it in the show notes and check it out, because a lot of the common thread that we've been talking about today is about openness, right? Whether it's about language and understand dialects, or it's around inclusivity or this. And we talked about modeling things after the web. And I think the whole idea behind OVON is to bring some of that openness to the industry and bring not only some standards that are open, but also put some pressure on, as you say, that great Red Sea to open up to some open standards and openness that will drive it. It will be good for it. So anyway, I could jump up and down and advertise for that too. And sometimes I feel like I do too much, but I think it's a great organization for anyone who's interested. love your newsletter. You put together some interesting, cool articles. I'm like, how does he find these articles? Because I don't see half of them, which is part of the reason why you subscribe to a newsletter. But tell me about your newsletter. You collaborate with Sam on that, and you do some podcasting.
Yeah, so I've been doing a podcast, but that's over for now. Okay. And I'm starting a new one, but that's in Dutch only. So, and it's fun. It's use case based. So we do example use cases from F1, the customer journey. But I won't talk about that. The newsletter is in English for everybody. And we'll add a link to it in the show notes. I have to look it up even. And so I do it all for the content and not for the marketing. So thank you if you might help market it. And basically, we started it because Sam and I both love voice. We do this anyway. And so let's share the knowledge that we find and be a little bit critical on it. And so over almost 2 years, we're doing it now. Sam dropped out, though. I don't know if you got that, because Sam left the voice industry. He's now working for Mickey Mouse and doing other cool stuff. But working for Walt Disney now, doing some other cool stuff. And AP couldn't make the time anymore. So a bummer, because I love doing things with other people. But on the other hand, but now it's all my show. And yeah, for me, it's really a fun way to shape my own opinion, mm-hmm. to learn from other people, to share the knowledge with everybody who wants to know about it. And it's fun because people actually miss it when it's not there. I had a little summer stop and people missed it. And on the other hand, it helps me shape my own opinion. So for instance, my last week was the first one after I came back from vacation. One of the things that I noticed is there were many examples of voice interoperability. The Amazon VII initiative had like six demos of interoperability. And I think it was Bixby and Google had an announcement, and now there's actually a video of an interoperability situation. So I was like, yes, it's happening slowly. Right. You can see the first pebbles on that surfing beach emerge. Or corals, or whatever you want to visualize it. So, I do this every week, every Monday, if you're a subscriber. And feel free to come on board.
Awesome. Yeah. No, and I like it too, because you do get some news and you express your opinion in it too, which is valuable too. Anybody can collect news. It's good when you analyze it a little bit and give your own thinking around it. That's what makes it more fun, actually, I think.
Yeah.
Hey, you also do some events, right? Or have you been doing
COVID pre-COVID, or some local events? Pre-COVID, I had a pretty big show called the Open Voice event series. What's in a name? It was by chance. It was earlier. But that was 300 people sometimes in one room, sponsored by one company who really liked it. And we had everybody in the Dutch voice community on board. It was for free. And sponsored, like I said, by commercial organizations. And we stopped that due to COVID. And now we're slowly, and the company that ran it, Cognizant, a large corporate. So they had good hardcore rules regarding COVID. So I don't know. They do want to continue, but don't know how yet. And so in the meantime, I've been doing open or voice live, very different formats, so weekly events, and which is interesting because that is where, for instance, the Voice Coalition really was born, or the first movements were born during the voice lunch. So weekly, I have guests here in Holland on an open call, a Zoom call, although it'll probably be bi-weekly because it's getting really busy here. But so I do the open voice, and hopefully soon again. And I'm thinking about, with things opening up, to come up with a different format, a little bit lighter, maybe not 300 people, but more like a meetup type thing. But nothing clear yet. I haven't seen it yet.
But, got it.
I'm an event organizer in denial. And you see me run around the events. I love it. And I love to speak on stages. I love to host and curate content. So, I don't know how yet, but there's stuff going to happen. I did the voice conference even here, the first big one in Holland as well. So, there's going to be stuff happening. There's no concrete plans yet.
Well, I love in-person events. I just like roaming the halls and seeing someone. I'd be like, I know you from your Twitter handle, right? It's my favorite, those kind of impromptu conversations. So I really miss them. But pros COVID, right? We're still struggling with it. We're going to... Maybe it's a chance to reinvent and rethink of some things, but I think in person is super important, and I'm excited for that to come back. And I didn't know I don't attend Voice Lunch Netherlands because I don't speak Dutch, but you're help hosting that then. Voice Lunch Netherlands, then? Yeah. Is that you're mentioned? Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah.
That's always in the newsletter. And
oh, yeah. No, I haven't attended because I don't speak Dutch. And it's probably at like 4 a.m. my time.
But and it really turned into a community like the international one. Yeah. It was the first international one, by the way, the Dutch one. We were first one.
I'm blown away by the growth of Voice Launch. I love the Voice Launch, and I do the main one, and I do the US and the technology one, bop in and out. I'm in the book club and that. But all the regional ones, I think that's amazing. It really resonated and things.
Was in everyone, but it was too much. I had to stop.
You'd probably spend 20 hours a week now. I don't know how many voice lunches there are, but there are quite a few.
I made a choice, and it's just because what should I do? I love talking, getting to know people, but I want to do stuff. So I literally said, okay, I'll just do the Dutch voice lunch, not the international ones anymore, unless I feel like it. And for the rest, Ovan and nothing else. And the network activity.
You sound like me sometimes. You can overcommit yourself to find interesting things, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, what happened to my day? So, hey, Martin. I love to ask my guests this question, and it's kind of my hidden gem question. It's a voice experience, could be skill, something independent, an action, or it could be a podcast, anything audio that you really enjoy that you think more people should discover. Kind of a hidden gem.
I think in general, Siri. I'm an iPhone user, and you can do so much with Siri. For instance, if you have a commercial in your podcast, hey, Siri, skip 2 minutes, then it works. And I find it amazing how many people don't use Siri and find don't like it, don't have a positive experience. And I've learned that if you try some things, you'll find some repetitive usage that works for you. But you have to try it. So there's nothing specific. But the more and more I'm starting to use Siri. And so it's not one specific. I recently tried to use Siri to open up Google Assistant so I can talk to my bank and see what my bank account statement was. Because I do that with Google Assistant. But it wouldn't work because it was in my pocket. And Google Assistant will only be opened by Siri if you are identified, if the phone is open. But this is a hardcore voice nerding and interoperability issue. But I love the use case. I'm like, yeah, that's what more people should do.
Yeah, because you can do Siri short. So we're a divided family. My kids, I've had an Apple phone forever. Now I have Apple and Samsung phones. And so use both ecosystems. But, Siri, I have to agree with you that it's underappreciated. What it does, it tends to do very well. Yeah. It's limited in what it does. But when it does something, it does it really well. And there's some things around device control that are really useful. Yeah. And then they've opened up the whole shortcuts, which are what you're talking about. So getting Siri to talk to Google Assistant and that. And actually, I know if you do it enough, then it makes a suggestion, right? We'll create this shortcut for you there. But yeah, no. Okay, that's a good one because it's there and everyone knows about it, but it's underappreciated probably in the industry it is very good at.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So, Mark, you said you didn't make any predictions, but I'm gonna ask you to make at least give me something short and long term. And you know what? As I say, we'll get together in 5 or 10 years over a beer and laugh over how ridiculous our predictions are, because mine are always wrong. But anyway, give me some things or predictions or things that you're excited about that are happening.
I know one.
You'd be thrilled to see bigger and better in 5 or 10 years or a year.
Bixby, Amazon Alexa, and Google Assistant will be gone in 5 years.
Wow. Now that's a controversial prediction. All right. Tell me more about that one.
Why? Because I think it's as much as we love it, it's not like the browser. I mean, maybe it is the browser. As in, we don't know what we do. But no, what's it called? What was the first one called again? Netscape. You forgot about Netscape.
Netscape, yeah.
I mean, you and I know it. But so in that sense, I think it's going to be part of
Mosaic.
Something.
NCSA Mosaic.
Oh, yeah. And exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So in that sense, and recently, I think it was in the newsletter, I looked up some old car brand, the first large car brand in the U.S. You don't know it. I can't remember what it was called. Right now, it's the coral underneath our beach where we're surfing. And everything is forming. And before you have an actual shape, it's based on all these little stuff that we both get energized about, why we create stuff for it. And but that whole choral, yeah, that whole movement of voice, it won't be called that what we think it is now, but it will be part. It will be part of our lives. And voice in general will, be, of course, be there. But I think all those large brands, and specifically if I look at Google Assistant, yeah, that's just a feature in a good way. It's like computers disappearing in your hotel door. You used to be the whole hotel room that was the computer. Now it's this little chip that recognizes your card or other way around. And that's how you get in. It's going to be everywhere, but it's not going to have those names that we know currently.
Oh, that's a great prediction. And nice and controversial, but that's interesting. I've heard the analogy that if we're in the phone industry, which isn't perfect for this, that we're still running around with a bunch of Blackberries and Palms, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the iPhone hasn't been invented and Android hasn't come out and things like that. And that's really where it went. Maybe true. Well, we'll have to see. That's a good one. All right. All right. Yeah. I will buy you a beer in 5 or 10 years. Hey, Martin, wrapping up, if people want to keep in touch with what you do, what's happening, Project Silver, the Dutch Voice Coalition, your newsletter, I will put all these things in the show notes, but if you can give me some brief ideas of how people can keep in contact with everything you do.
I think best is just follow me on LinkedIn. Lens Fitzgerald is easy to find everywhere, but LinkedIn is where is the feed I use. Or the system I use to feed people whatever's happening with all the initiatives that I'm involved in. And ProjectSilver.com has its own website. This feature, the Dutch Voice Coalition, has its own website. But everything I do is always published also in my personal feed on LinkedIn. So that's the easiest, as well as the newsletter, of course, and the podcast I do.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'll make sure to put those all in the show notes. But yeah, check out Martin on LinkedIn. And I think you're pretty active on Twitter, right? Dutch Cowboy is your...
Dutch Cowboy. Yeah, that's more personal. But yeah, I'm always active on... So if you want to interact with me, I'm more interactive if I'm there. Yeah, I publish less and interact more on Twitter as Dutch Cowboy. Yes.
Got it. All right. Well, hey, Martin. I think we could keep on talking because such intriguing, interesting things. And you and I see eye to eye in so much of where the voice industry is and its challenges and the opportunities and what's going to happen. But for the sake of our listeners, we should probably wrap up. It has been a true pleasure. Really super interesting. I knew you were involved in all these things and I was super excited to talk to you and understand more about that. And now you got me even more excited. I love what you're doing with the Dutch Voice Coalition and Voice for the People. And, you know,
and they scoped me down because I wanted to, of course, have the European Voice Coalition with the Dutch podcast. I said, no, Martin, you have to focus on Holland because I want to do it for the world because I think the world.
Well, that's the next wave to catch as we're surfing.
Exactly. Right?
To overuse our metaphor, to beat it to death.
Right? That's what the big wave's called, Maverick.
The Maverick is the European Voice Coalition, or the World Voice Coalition is Maverick.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. But thank you for being an amazing guest. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you for having me. And hope to see you soon to buy you beer anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I love in-person events. So let's get together soon, sooner rather than later. All right. That's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe from the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.